emergency, we will exit through the closest doors, which are illuminated by an exit sign. We will assemble on the lawn of the National Building Museum. An automated external defibrillator is available behind the guard station. Fire extinguishers are strategically located throughout the building. Restrooms are past the guard desk on the left. It's only fitting that on Valentine's Day, we will discuss matters of the heart.
All right. Sounds good.
American Heart Association recognizes February as American Heart Month. Ryan, please play the video.
If you see a teen or adult suddenly collapse, it's important to act fast. Helping to save a life is easier than you might think. Just start hands-only CPR. The first step is to send someone to call 911 or call 911 yourself. Then get directly over the victim. Put the heel of one hand in the center of the chest, then put your other hand on top of the first. Then push hard and fast in the center of the chest until help arrives. It's important to push, giving 100 to 120 compressions per minute, which is about the same tempo as the song Stayin' Alive. To learn more, call 877-AHA-4CPR or visit heart.org/hands-only-CPR.
Would have worn my John Travolta suit today if I'd known that. Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, our first order of business is the approval of the agenda. I'd like to move the agenda. Is there a second? Discussion. Excuse me. Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, David Horner. Are you on the phone, David?
I am, yes.
Okay. The next order, item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. So let's see, we have the minutes of January 24th, 2019, January 25th, 2019 executive session, February 1st, 2019 executive session, and February 7th, 2019 executive session. So I'd like to move approval of the minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, the next item is the pension and OBED overview. It says, what do I say here? Before turning the floor over to Dennis and our guest, Metro's pension consultant, I'd like to give a brief overview of the one item on the agenda for today's discussion. Metro has significant unfunded retiree financial obligations with an estimated $3.5 billion in unfunded liabilities. One of the board's strategic priorities is to figure out how Metro can address these liabilities in the years ahead. Today's discussion will begin. We'll begin that conversation by providing us with background information on pension and retiree health financial results and funding projections. So, Dennis, I'd like to turn the floor over to you. Thank you, and you and your staff.
Thank you. Quickly, Mr. Chairman, I will turn the microphone over for introductions.
Al Karim Aladina with Aon.
Kathy Furrer with Aon.
I'm Duffy, Director of Compensation and Benefits at Vermont.
Again, thank you so much. Today, quickly on the agenda, we will briefly go through pensions, starting with an overview of financial summary and then options for board consideration. And then we'll quickly jump to retiree health care and do essentially the same thing. So I will start with an executive summary. As Mr. Chairman, you've noted on several occasions, WMATA has a retiree healthcare liability of over $2 billion and a pension liability approaching $1 billion. Combined, that's over $3 billion, which must at some point be taken care of. As this committee also knows, WMATA has taken some actions already with respect to both pensions as well as retiree healthcare. For example, most recently, WMATA changed the prescription drugs coverage. We've eliminated healthcare benefits for non-reps. Sought to establish a DC plan in the last negotiating sessions, and looking for help with respect to making those changes going forward in terms of future collective bargaining. Now I'll turn it over to Karim, who will walk through the next set of the presentations.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to present. So, as Dennis mentioned, we're going to do the pension and the retiring medical. My colleague, Kathy, who is a subject matter expert with Aon on retiring medical programs, will walk us through that. I'll try to cover the pension section. And we'll probably go a little bit faster on the pension section because the pension plans are funded. You know, they're not fully funded, but there are assets that are set aside to cover pension benefits. And the retiring medical plan is unfunded, so we'll probably spend a little bit more time on that. I believe we have about a total of 15 minutes, so we'll try to split it accordingly to allow you to have questions after that. So on this slide that you're looking at here, we want to briefly sort of give you an idea why it might make sense to make sure that you have ongoing regular conversations with your benefit programs, be it pension or retiree medical. It's because they do present a significant balance sheet liability. Even though the pension plans are funded, you almost have $1 billion of unfunded liability that WMATA is committed to. These are for benefits that have to be paid over time. And also, pension benefit obligations are measured using interest rate, longevity assumptions, and these things change over time or on a more frequent basis. So that does present a lot of volatility in the obligations. And so that's something that you want to keep in mind as well, because longevity is changing, and with medical technology and so on, there's greater life expectancy. And basically what that means, both for pension and retired medical, is that people are going to be around longer and they're going to collect a benefit for a longer period of time, which increases the cost of those benefits. There's also then these benefits, as I said, because they're funded, they're not completely funded, you have ongoing obligations that you have to meet. And so the cash requirement right now for the pension programs, the five pension programs, is roughly about $150 million a year. So there's a significant cash outlay as well, in addition to the unfunded liability. And the last thing that I'll mention is that with the changing accounting requirements, the Government Accounting Standards Board is now making it more visible on your CAFR. That not that this information wasn't there before, but it's much more pronounced now in terms of the obligations and the assets and the unfunded. So that becomes much more evident and may impact some of the other management decisions that you make. Okay. If we go to the next slide, on slide 5, we've given you here a quick summary of the most current valuation results from the actuaries for the specific plans. You have five pension plans, as you're aware. We've spoken about them before. The total participant group, which includes current active employees, it includes pensioners who are collecting a benefit, it includes survivors of participants, and also includes former employees, those who were here but have left and are still entitled to a benefit at some point in the future. And the total is about 19,000 participants over year. We don't see much change in that. So you have slow growth in that. So it's probably about a steady population. As was mentioned, I believe, by the chairman, and it's in the brief, the obligations for all five plans combined, and I'm now focused on the total column only, is roughly about $5 billion. Okay, spread over the five plans, with Local 689 being the largest plan. And the assets that are backing those obligations are $4.1 billion. Those are smooth assets. What that means is that you are investment gains and losses are being reflected over a period of time just to minimize some of the volatility. But if we were to just go to your trust and look at your trust and see what the assets are, which are then monies that are readily available today, that number is just slightly different. Instead of 4.1, it's about $4.2 billion, so not much different. So you have about a $900 million unfunded, about 82% funded. I will say that even though that the $900 million may seem large, it is large, but the 82% funded is a fairly reasonably well-funded position compared to other plans. So your ability to contribute on a regular basis in the past has put you in a good position. The bottom part of that chart speaks to the contributions. I mentioned before that it's about $150 million a year. There are two pieces to that. There's a portion that funds the unfunded liability. These are obligations that have accrued but that you've not yet funded. And then there is the first part, which is called the normal cost. That is the cost of benefits that are accruing for every year of service that's rendered by your current active employees. And that is roughly about $90 million. So most of your $150 million that you're putting into the plan is for accruals that are taking place. Okay?
Excuse me.
Sure.
Yeah, I just have I'm sort of curious. For organizations similar to WMATA around the country, is it uncommon or is it common to have four or five different funds, pension funds?
So it really depends. I think your funds are situated the way they are because of the collective bargaining unions that you're on. Yeah. So it's I mean most companies, most jurisdictions will have one, but it's not uncommon to have multiple either.
Yeah. I was just curious.
Yeah. No.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you want to add anything?
Why did you say we have 5 hours? Why do we have 5 instead of 1?
The answer to your question, sir, is that it is uncommon to have 5 pension funds in an organization of this size.
But why do we have 5? Is it historical?
It's historical. Some of them were transitions from the initial buzz providers who came here, I think, with respect to 689. But the history here has been each union has its own fund, and you see some of this also in the healthcare plan, where at least 2 of those plans have their own healthcare fund, which again has its own inefficiencies built in.
And so, Dennis, you are right. In that regard, if you notice, some of them are really small.
Yeah.
Right? Like you have less than 500 people in Local 2, and you have a separate plan set up for that.
Yeah. So, what are the advantages and disadvantages of having 5 funds?
Right.
Are the advantages to have funds?
The next slide actually sets up some advantages. No, it's perfectly fine. On this slide, the consolidation would lead to lower costs for managing these programs. Okay? But if you look at the next slide, what happens, not only do you have 5 pension plans, then you actually have 5 different investment trustee groups or trustee groups that are managing these plans, right? And so you have you have a multitude of investment managers that are aligned across all of these from 3 to 7, as you see on the slide that's presented there. So, Mr. Chairman, the question that you asked, if you were to consolidate this into a single plan, hypothetically, even if you didn't consolidate the obligations into a single plan, if you were to still at least consolidate the trusts, the asset trust, master trust, into a single master trust, then you would have, we believe, quite a bit of efficiencies, in the sense that you probably would have some savings in investment management fees because you're pooled across a larger asset size. You would also have the opportunity to provide some of the smaller funds opportunities to participate in investment vehicles that they may not have access to, not because they're part of a larger pool of assets, right? So the answer to your question, sir, is that if you don't even combine, if you choose not to consolidate all the pension plans, it would be worthwhile for WMATA to explore the potential to creating a single master trust that covers these 5 pension plans and looks at them in holistically in terms of an investment strategy and achieving some efficiencies. Okay? If we go to the next slide, on slide 7 then. Sorry. Yes.
If I could just follow up with that. Just so you know, we have 2 new leaders at 689-922, and just I believe last week I sent a letter to all 5 unions on that very point, that this is a time, given the 3% cap, that at a minimum we should look at the administrative cost of this and see where we can consolidate that to save dollars. Yep. So I will let you know how that goes with
That's actually good to hear. I was going to wait to ask Jackson question, but I think, you know, looking at those efficiencies is a good thing, or at least discussing them.
Yeah.
But it's an important point.
No, is it within our purview to combine these, or do we have to get somebody else's permission to combine these, or what if the board rule tomorrow to combine all 5 systems?
Mr. Chairman, the board support will be crucial in accomplishing that goal. However, the collective bargaining agreements require negotiations with respect to any proposed changes regarding the pension funds or even the healthcare funds.
So the answer is we have to go to the collective bargaining?
Yes, sir.
Yes, so we can't have it within our power.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Good enough.
But there are... Sorry, go ahead, Mr. Chairman. No, please.
But it is important, I think, as a policy of the board, that is that something that you want to project, I think, would be important. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. My only comment was going to be that, yes, it does require us collective bargaining, but there are... we feel it can only yield positive results into potential better investment performance and fee savings. Okay. On this chart, though, we've also laid out some options other than the combination of the trust, which we believe, because of the funded status of the plan, is the best opportunity to try to create some efficiency in your pension programs, is the consolidation of the trust. The other option is if WMATA were to decide that they want to better fund the pension plan to improve the security, to be more thoughtful in terms of what future requirements are, we've laid out some opportunities of funding that can be done. Either you can go on the regular basis that you're doing, or you could potentially decide to do a one-time sort of contribution to the pension trust, and that can be done either through cash from WMATA, or it can actually be done through potentially using creative alternative solutions such as debt financing, where you could issue debt, and then the proceeds of that debt issuance would be used to fund the pension plan. Okay, that would improve the funded status and would reduce future requirements, but it's still, as I say, the plans are reasonably well funded, but the arbitrage is there that the rate that you earn in the pension trust on your investment return on your assets may be much better than the cost of issuing the debt. And so there's that potential to leverage that arbitrage between those two rates to more efficiently fund the pension plan.
So let's see if we have any questions. And we'll get to
yeah, as a non-committee member, just had a question about this. What is the delta between that in terms of doing the arbitrage versus current arrangement?
If you take the 25-year historical investment return, even if you take the average by 7.5% compared to the taxable debt around 5, so if you look at a 200 basis point difference, it could be more, it could be less than 100%.
Yeah, it could be substantial, if that's your question. Yeah. Yep. And then the last thing I'll mention on the pension is that some things that you've already done for new hires, you've moved to a defined contribution arrangement. The savings plan minimizes volatility and sort of draws a line in the sand compared to pension benefits. So that can continue for your other pension programs, which you haven't done yet, potentially. But the biggest play, as I said, is the trust and then potentially the thought about the funding, if you wish to do that. Yeah?
Just going back to the idea of combining the plans, are you aware of any transit property such as SEPT in Southeast Pennsylvania or MBTA in Boston where there is one trust and all the individual unions contribute to that plan and that the trustees are selected among all the unions in some combined fashion? Are you aware of any entity like that?
Yes.
Which is that?
I know for a fact that CTA has one pension plan for all of its employees, both union and non-union, and both local 689, which is the ATU, as well as other unions in the organization.
And is that the City of Chicago pension plan, or is that a separate pension plan operated by the CTA?
It's a separate pension plan operated by the CTA, yes.
Yeah. So there's examples, and we can come back to the committee with more insights on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions on the pension? Moving on to the pension. Okay.
Yeah, we keep moving to the retirement.
All right. On slide 9, this deals with the retiree health obligations. As we've mentioned, it's over $2 billion in a liability for these benefits. And as Alcrim mentioned, similar to the pension, this large liability is on the balance sheet, on your financial statements, very visible and potentially volatile. What I'll say about this $2 billion liability is it is uncapped. And what I mean by that, from a trend standpoint, trend increases will continue to impact the liability, as well as the WMATA subsidy is not capped. On the next page, we actually break down the liability into a couple different buckets. And we've looked at what does the liability look like by each of the union groups. And the graph on the top left shows Local 689 represents 61% of that liability. $2 billion liability. The chart on the right just shows you the breakdown by each of the entities, headcounts, liabilities, and I guess the, you know, the one consideration to make here, similar to the pension, is you may have some efficiencies by combining these programs under one carrier. From an administrative fee standpoint, one or two carriers, I think today you're dealing with about four and potentially five. The second graph on the right in the middle, I mean on the left, excuse me, in the middle, is a breakdown of the liability between current retirees and future retirees. So the retired box is 57% of the liability is associated with existing retirees and 43% for the future retirees that or the employees that we assume will retire and become eligible and covered under this plan. The third box on the left, the third graphic on the left, down at the bottom, shows a breakdown of the liability between the benefits provided to retirees, whether they're current retirees or future retirees, between pre-Medicare, which represents 23% of the liability, and then Medicare benefits, which is the long tail on this liability. That 77% of the liability is associated with Medicare benefits. And frankly, that's where a lot of the solutions reside, where you can make some changes, and that's what we'll talk about in a bit.
So in the essence of time, we'll go through really quickly. One of the considerations for the retiree medical plans is funding, and we've had this conversation here before about the idea of funding. It was actually last year and where it was approved to fund the plan, and about $3 million, I believe, were set aside in a trust to begin to fund the plan. Kathy mentioned there's about $2 billion of obligations, so that it's a small amount, but it's a start. This chart is simply, the blue line simply shows that if you were to fund the plan, you have to continue to pay about $49 million of ongoing benefits to retirees, but if you begin to put some money into a trust, that over time what happens is that you're able to leverage the investment returns that you earn in that trust to begin to pay off benefits. So in the long term, it's cheaper if you're able to fund. One, it secures the benefits, reduces sort of really skyrocketing costs in the future, and then again, as I said, it reduces sort of the outlay as well. Yeah? So I'm just going to keep moving on this one rather than spend more time unless there are questions.
All right, so on slide 12, I'm going to cover some solutions. Again, most of these solutions, other than the funding, subject to union agreement, collective bargaining. But these are, again, options that you can consider for reducing the liability. In the first two rows, from an efficiency standpoint, this talks about how do you deliver, and this is focused on the Medicare retiree benefits, so that 77% of the liability. It focuses on two different types of solutions, the first one being Medicare Advantage. And this is from a group Medicare Advantage standpoint. I'm not talking about individual market Medicare Advantage. And so the potential is there to put in this group Medicare Advantage plan. Again, it would be a fully insured program for the Medicare retirees and their spouses. We are going to conduct a feasibility study to see what this looks like. And what we'll do is look at it for the entire population, all union groups, what it would look like for them to go to a group Medicare Advantage plan. Our idea is to put in a plan, and it can be done, that pretty much mirrors the benefits, so the plan cost share that the retirees have for services and for drugs, to put that into a group Medicare Advantage framework. And again, what it does is it has the potential to reduce costs without shifting costs to the retirees themselves. I have seen employers save 15% or more on their medical liability by making this change. And it is often a stepping stone to the individual market. You know, under this structure, you still would have trend increases. So you would still have the potential volatility of trend and what that might be in the future for healthcare costs.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question? When you say potential impact, I know you're going to be doing these feasibility studies, but give us some sort of sense of what a dollar sign equals.
Yeah, so I put on there 15% or more. It's really
okay,
hard
so it's of the overall.
It really of the medical spend for Medicare retirees overall. That's right. And that's looking at, again, at the full population.
Okay.
It really very much depends on where retirees reside. That's why a study is very important. Mm-hmm. It's very much dependent on that. So we'll get those results back as soon as we can. The second solution, again, under the efficiency is use of the Medicare individual market. It's a very robust market. It provides retirees a lot of choice of options. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution, and we all know retirees all have different needs. It is a chance, again, for retirees to find the best coverage for them, maybe different coverage for their spouse. It is a fixed cost for WMATA, and so how it works is a retiree goes to the individual market with help. Licensed advisors help the retirees to sort through the plans, find plans that work best for them, and then they're reimbursed the cost of those plans by WMATA's subsidy. There are the potential, and again, this is another study that we will do. We're going to look at every retiree in the population to see where they live, what they might be able to buy, and what the cost impact is to them, the group plan versus individual market options. There is the potential for some retirees to have additional cost under this, and that's what we need to sort of vet out and see what that looks like to see if this is a viable solution. And then we did talk about funding.
Yeah, so the only quick one other comment just on the funding. We did talk about the chart, and if there's any continuing funding that's going to take place. But the alternative funding strategies that we just briefly discussed on the pension side, which is the debt financing and so on, can also be employed to fund these obligations as well. So I'll just put that out there as a thought.
And then some more traditional changes are, adding or changing your minimum eligibility requirements. So the age and service requirements that you have for a person to qualify for coverage. Again, you have to be careful with this one because you change the eligibility, you may, impact the ability for people to retire, which may be, contrary to what you want to do from a workforce standpoint. The subsidy, there's a couple things to look at here. You have hidden subsidies in pre-Medicare rates. Those are expensive. You have, in some groups, the same subsidy for the spouse that you do for a retiree. Does that seem appropriate? And I think these are all questions you need to ask yourself as you go through this. Should the subsidy be service-based? This is a retirement program. So does it make sense to add a service component to the subsidy? And then again, plan benefit levels, that's just the cost share. What does a person pay to go to the hospital or pay to go to the doctor or pay for prescription drugs? You should really always be looking at those levels relative to the total cost of care. So again, everything's subject to study and to collective bargaining for the plan changes.
Mr. Chair, if I could, just a point of information on your slide 10, the life insurance benefit.
Yes.
Is that for a certain period of time after one retires, or is it for till the end?
It's
the life insurance benefit is purchased.
Oh, it is okay. So they pay for that top. Okay. Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah, from my editorial comment, going back to the Medicare.
The chart on slide 12?
Yeah. Obviously, you just put that in there for, we talk about the individual plan as an option, because a lot of it depends on the sophistication of the purchaser. And as we know, these individual plans could be all over the place.
Right. Admittedly, many options to choose from.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And they may not be sophisticated enough to go through those particular options without some real supervision, guidance.
And that would be our recommendation, that you work with what's called a private exchange. They employ licensed advisors in all 50 states, and they help them. They go through a needs assessment. They really narrow down the choices for the members and help them to find the right plan.
In terms of my experience and this aspect of it, the Medicare Advantage plan may be the most appropriate one. I know that's probably what you would probably recommend, but you had to put other options for the client to review. Would you not concur with that?
I would say you should look at both, honestly. I see Group Medicare Advantage going in place, probably more in the, that's probably the play that is happening with public entities. Many private organizations have moved to individual market after having done Group Medicare Advantage for a period of time.
The transition is probably easier.
Sorry.
The transition is probably easier.
The transition is definitely easier.
If that's what you're getting at.
That's exactly
right. Right.
My personal experience with the individual market, we were talking about that previously within my family. And it takes a lot of communication, but the opportunities for the individuals to create a plan for themselves in terms of tailoring a plan for themselves is tremendous. But the opportunity to have someone, as Catherine was saying, to talk you through the options available, because your plan may not necessarily have everything you want, but there may be supplemental coverage that you can purchase, for example, from a partner like ARP. And that individual that's in exchange is talking with that retiree. They're talking with that retiree through an entire process. So you have a point of contact to answer all your questions, and that's how we would have to implement it. We would have to provide the service levels, the opportunities for people to get their questions answered ahead of time, months ahead of time, before this is actually put into place, and make sure that it agrees with their financial situation as well, in terms of guided options.
Good luck.
It's not an easy
list. It's very complicated. So I have a kind of overall questions. So we have two items here. We have a pension, and then we have the retiree health. I mean, we call it other post-employment benefits. Is that what you guys call it, too?
Yes.
OPEB, yes.
All right. So pension and OPEB. The pension is funded, according to what you're saying, at 81%. And it is an item on our inventory. And then we have this OPED, which appears to be not funded much at all. The general way of dealing with these in governments is to ignore them and hope they go away, or at least pass them on to the next group who comes down the line. Because change is hard. So if we're going to change anything, there will be enormous opposition because people oppose change because they don't understand it and they fear that it will somehow negatively affect them. So change is very hard. So you're trying to change something, you run into opposition, and it's not an immediate catastrophe, so it's easier just not to deal with it. This is in my 4 years here, this is how we've been dealing with this, is to try not to deal with it. Okay. So what I want to know is, if we do nothing and continue to do nothing, is there a risk to this system somewhere down the line that the cost of doing this on a pay-as-you-go basis becomes so great that it will subsume the system? I'll give you an example. In the District of Columbia, in 1995, our unfunded pension liability was enormous. So big that if we did not do something by 2010, we were not able to do any financial planning. So all of our financial planning ended at 2010 because all the revenue coming into the city in 2010, looking at it from 1995, would go to fund the pensions. So we had no money to do anything. So we were on that catastrophe that was coming. How it got solved is, in the Revitalization Act, the federal government assumed responsibility for the $10 billion of unfunded liabilities for the district. And we started over at zero. And we have, to our credit, have funded it at 100% since then. But you see, in the district situation in 1995, if we did nothing, by 2010, the city was out of business, literally out of business. Is Metro facing that prospect, sitting here in 2019, that in 2030, if we do nothing, the obligations for these, for the pension and the OPEB will be so great that I won't have enough money to run the system? So that's my question. If anybody can even answer that, I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, in my view, Metro has greater risk with respect to OPEB than pension for a couple of reasons. One, there's a pension trust with, as you said, 81% funded, which means that with respect to retirees, there is some trust there that will continue to pay those benefits going forward. However, with respect to OPEB, we've made a $3 million contribution to the trust, and the board this year authorized the general manager to contribute further to the extent that we have a positive budget balance. That said, with the 3% cap and the fact that Metro is contributing about $60 million a year for with respect to retiree healthcare costs, there will come a time when this board has to make choices between continuing services on the street and funding your OPEB obligations. Some other organizations have taken action to try and cap that liability, and WMAT has taken some of those actions. But you've got $2 billion out there, and those obligations will come due. And this organization has to do something to make sure that those consequences do not destroy the core mission of this organization.
Okay. Anybody else? Paul, do you want to add anything to that?
You know, as we've talked about before, one way to lessen that potential is to establish a trust and start to put some dollars into it. That would do that. I agree with the pension statement that basically we do have, in the scheme of things compared to other public entities, 80% is pretty good. I'm sure around the table that's, acceptable. But really the health benefit issue is the larger issue staring us in the face. And with a 3% cap, it will get tougher and tougher every year.
Okay. Because I don't want to be out there saying, and I'll go to you next, Paul, that 10 years from now, Metro faces a tremendous crisis if we don't do something, and come across like Chicken Little. All right, well, the sky's falling, and that's being Jack, and we don't have to pay attention to him because he's always overstating the problem, for instance. So I want to make sure, if I continue to say that this system will face a huge problem 10 years from now, if we do nothing, that I am not accurately portraying the situation.
If you just take a look at slide 11, yes. I think it captures the point that you're trying to make. If you just look at the red line, you see almost like this almost exponential rise.
Right.
You're going from the current 50, 60 million to about 110 million to 120 million annual cash outlay.
Right.
So you are going to see what you're saying.
Right.
Which is, if it's unfunded, then you're going to continue to have to put in more and more money from.
Okay. I will finish with this.
Sorry.
So the answer that it will take care of itself is probably not a good answer. That's what I would say.
The absence of you doing something dramatic, right, like eliminating the benefits, I'm not saying you're going to do that, but right, in the absence of that, yes.
Okay, Paul?
Go ahead, Willie Clarence.
Oh, I'm sorry. Clarence, go ahead.
Sure.
I didn't see you.
Thank you. So this is just another example of where we are today, and that is that nothing is free, nothing is easy. These are hard decisions that we have to make. You know, Mr. Chairman, it would have been great, I guess, to be on the board 20, 25 years ago when you didn't have these issues. We're on the board now, and all of these issues are coming up one behind the other. Very, very hard decisions. And the problem that we have with the hard decisions is that trying to do the right thing in the short term is real painful.
Yes.
But if we can figure out how to do the right thing in the short term, there's typically a long-term benefit associated with that. Just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
Okay. Paul?
Yeah. I'm curious, the 81% that you highlight there, and said it's a decent amount, but yet not the best percentage. So when you run your various models, what percentage are you looking at to hope that the system would obtain? Is it 90%, 85%, 95%? I mean, obviously, then 100 would obviously be the best answer. But, you know, what gets us to a point that sort of makes things easier to manage, I guess?
80% is not a reasonable number as long as you're not adding to your liability.
Right.
Which is why the options that were discussed today include governance, transparency, efficiencies, as well as funding. So, I mean,
but I'm assuming, Dennis, that some of those efficiencies are only going to get us so far.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you're not adding to your liability over time, that 80% will grow to 90%. But if you're in the range of 80 to 100%, I think you're good.
So I would also concur with what Dennis said. And I don't know if 100% is where you want to be. Right? And I know you weren't.
I'm not saying that. No one I know is at 100%.
The reason is because at the
80%.
Yeah, okay. Yes. And you could be, but if you were to start a new plan and you always paid the cost of benefits that accrued, mm-hmm. absolutely you're going to be at 100%, right? So long as your investment marks that. So, but I would say that, you know, it's an ongoing plan. It's not like you're terminating it. The growth rate is muted because, you know, you're closing it off. You've got a different arrangement for new people, right? So you've taken some actions to mitigate that. And so for that reason, also, the 82.
And the only reason I'm asking is because obviously we have quite a financial challenge ahead of us.
Yes.
So what is the more reasonable percentage, to sort of level things out a little bit and give us...
Yeah. And again, as I said...
Again, 85 to 90.
Yeah, and then what might... And again, we haven't done this, but what we could do, and we'll have to see how meaningful it is for you, but, you know, we could do sort of a... You know how for the retired medical, we sort of said, here's what your cash outlay is going to look like, you know, 5, 10, 15, 25 years from now, right? Yeah. One could also take a look at it from a pension perspective that if you just kind of maintain status quo, right? What kind of growth trajectory are you looking at? And that might be a better place to answer your question to say, look, is this viable or not viable 5 years from now or 10 years from now? Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
So we'd be happy to sort of model something like that out. If it makes sense.
I think, and I think this gets to the chairman's point. Yes, we got to continue to chip away at this. But it doesn't mean that we stop service. It just means it gets tighter and tighter and tighter every year when we get to our operating budget. And it'll make harder and harder decisions. We'll put service, fare increases will be on the table to deal with these issues. Just over time, just keeps, you know. So the more that we can push this, mm-hmm. whether it's 83, 84, whatever, reduces that pressure on us.
Right.
But particularly on the health side, that you can see where that grows. We don't have any mechanism to do that without the trust. We, you know, you can see the red line. So each year we'll have to take that off the top first, and now deal with other things that are growing around us, energy, you know, fuel, whatever, and then try to deliver everything that people want. So that's the hard pressure we're under.
Thank you,
John. Yeah. The bottom line is that we can't fund our way out of this healthcare piece, the $2 billion. The only reality that you have here is that this is where our fiduciary responsibility comes in. This is where leadership comes in. You said you wish you were back 25 years ago, whatever the number was. People will be saying the same thing, that we did not have the political courage to deal with this issue, so we'll leave it as part of our legacy to future board members. But the bottom line is the only way is to debt finance this thing at this particular point. I don't see any other way of dealing with this. I don't see the various jurisdictions giving more money for this purpose. I don't see us being able to take money out of the budget. So that's one of the biggest threats that we have mm-hmm. to the organization financially. You're the experts.
Yeah, I mean, that is a creative option that can help you get to a better place and begin to take care of the problem
sure.
in the future. Yeah.
Can I just go back to the prior chart on the blue and red lines?
sorry, on 11, side 11?
I thought it was
yes.
The one before the, yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Do I still understand that both the payments on all the years on the blue line and the red line basically end up at $2 billion by 2045?
It's the present value of those today is $2 billion. So it's going to be higher than that. We have interest discounted them. So yes, your answer to your question is yep. And there's a, sorry, there's another 45-year tail that we haven't shown on the chart. Okay, these like, you know, we these payments you have to make till the last retiree leaves the plan, and we've only shown you till 2046. Payments still continue out into like 2050, 60, 70 as well. We just, because we couldn't fit everything on the chart, we've done this.
So where do those lines go at that point?
So there's a widening. The blue and the red is a much widening. Right. So you see the red is kind of, we saw the red sort of coming down a little bit,
sure.
But the blue is able to then, the gap between the two is bigger.
So the red goes down, yeah. But the blue goes down.
It goes down faster, right? And you have more money in the, yeah, and because you have money in the trust and with the investment returns, you're covering the cost of benefits then.
Now, second question. As I read this, what you're asking the board to do is to pay more for the until 2033 than would be required under the PAYGO.
Yeah, because you have to build up the trust in order to be able to pay it off over time.
And why is that blue line the right blue line? Why isn't a blue line that has less acceleration,
right.
Less incline,
right.
an equal
right.
So, choice?
So you ask a fantastic question. I will simply say that we did a scenario, assuming like 5 million initially, 10 million more, 15 million after that. But if you did, this line could be, the blue line can be designed based on your objectives and what you can bear. If it is this debt financing and I'm going to drop in $1 billion, I'm making that up, then of course the blue line is going to look very different, right? It could be 3 million at a time or a flat 5 million at a time. That just means it's going to take longer. We just built one scenario, but depending on the direction of management and the board, we can build other scenarios that you can take a look at.
Right. It just strikes me that that's an odd scenario because you're essentially having us in 2 years, looks like in 2025, 2026, 2027, you know, paying three times more than the current PAYGO amount, while if we stuck to the red line, the PAYGO, we would never get to that level in any 1 year.
Yeah. Sorry, I was going to say that because you have no assets backing that, so we were trying to get enough seed money built in, right? So that you can then actually leverage the investment returns to be able to reduce future costs. That's the reason why it's higher. But if you, because otherwise, if you just follow the PAYGO, you're going to put money in and take money out. There's going to be no gain that's going to take place.
And what's the assumption for the rate of return for the money that's going in the lockbox?
It's about 7.
You know, under the blue line.
We've assumed 7%.
7%.
Yeah. So it's a fairly aggressive return assumption as well. Fair enough.
Is that the same assumption you used on the pension calculations in the first part of the presentation?
The pension calculations have varying. The larger plan, Local 689, is using 7.85%, and the smaller plans are using 7 or 7.5%. So yes, fairly close. Yeah. Okay. Sorry?
Where do you get that kind of return?
The Ukraine.
It's a $4 billion trust, so perhaps some different options, but I agree that it might be, so I do not disagree with you that the 7.85 may be on, a bit on the higher end than expected. So you have to have some alternative investments that need to yield to that.
It's fine. I mean, I get the English later, but I mean, you can't use a bank like it is with 3%.
So, it's not a bank. Not a bank. These are investment funds there. And,
yeah, over time, I got you. You know, it's a game we play. Any more questions on this? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, that's it. There's no other business to come before the committee. We just need to adjourn before we head to the...